Good morning, Mr. Guerin.
Good morning, Your Honor.
And I believe we have a couple of folks on the phone. Can you identify yourselves?
Yes, Your Honor. It's Mary Olson on behalf of Brittany Conkle and the settlement class.
Good morning, Ms. Olson.
Morning.
Is Mr. Calvert there? Ms. Olson, there's a hissing sound that's coming through to the courtroom here. Is there something you can do on your end that might alleviate that?
I'm on my desktop phone. I hear some interference too, but I can call back in.
No, it's okay. I mean, I can hear you. We will survive. All right. And Mr. Calvert is
Thank
not
you.
There.
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Mr. Calvert is, I thought he was going to appear, Mr. Guerin, by phone.
I think he was. I did hear a second beep, and maybe he's got a connection issue. He is calling in from California. So.
Okay. Well, let's see. Let me pull up my notes here. So this is on the final hearing on the joint motion for approval of class action settlement of Warren Act claims. And I gave the trustee and his counsel a little bit of homework, and you guys have completed the assignment. I appreciate that. I do have some other questions, but I just want to open it up to you and to Ms. Olson if you have anything that you'd like to apprise the court, any presentation you'd like to make before I dive into my questions.
All right, Your Honor, I'll make it very brief, given this is an uncontested matter, right? We're here before the court on the trustee's motion to approve the class action settlement, as you indicated, with respect to a class of employees that you established at a prior hearing, which resolves Warren Act claims for about 100 employees. So it's an important, one of the more important claims issues we still have left in the case. There weren't any objections. There are no opt-outs of any of the class members prior to the hearing. Your letter instruction from us of November 6th instructed us to address certain matters. I think the concerns were partially arose from a letter that was filed by the court by Ms. Pell. And I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail around that. I think we provided the response to Your Honor, but I will say that I think the Pell letter is a scurrilous attack on a number of parties, wide-ranging parties, including the trustee, the trustee's counsel, the committee's counsel, the U.S. trustee's offices, employees of the Mint, Mr. Wagner, a number of other people. So I will tell you, I think that it is based on falsehoods and baseless innuendo. I think there are provably false allegations that are contained in that letter. I think among those, or specifically with respect to the letter you wrote to the trustee and directed us to address, are the issues about what happened with the servers, the ART computers. Ms. Pell has alleged more than once now that those ART computers were misappropriated by Mr. Wagner, that they're in Mr. Wagner's control or one of his employees' control, and that they have access to those computers. That's just false.
Let me stop you there, Mr. Guerin. I know you and Mr. Calvert take great umbrage at the letters that Ms. Pell has written. I view them differently. I have concerns about Mr. Calvert's conduct during this case. I've said this before many times. So I think you probably want to dial it down.
Yeah,
so let's just leave it at that. I've got evidence that contradicts what Mr. Calvert says under oath. I've got this letter from Jennifer Baker. And Mr. Calvert has no explanation yet again for why one of his few remaining employees has said something that contradicts him.
Well, I don't understand that, Your Honor. I will tell you, he does not have control over every message that one of his employees
sent. Well, someone told her to say this.
I don't know if that's true, Your Honor.
Well, why would she make it up then?
I don't know. I don't know why she would say
it. Well, let me be perfectly clear. Mr. Calvert's not going to get paid a dime in this case until I get an explanation. And so he can say, I don't know, and I'm not going to drill it down to the ground today, but I am not pleased with Mr. Calvert's conduct in this case. I've made that clear. So you can attack Ms. Pell all you want. I'm going to get to the bottom of the allegations. If they're false, they're false. Some of them have not proven to be false. Okay, so I have some serious concerns. That's why I raised the letter. So you're attacking Ms. Pell. You're basically saying my inquiries are baseless. I don't believe that they are.
That's not true. I think we addressed your inquiries, and I think we've given you the evidence in response to what you asked us to address.
Right.
And we'll address whatever other issues you want us to address.
Well, why did Ms. Baker talk about a reorder using your existing dyes?
I don't know the answer to that. Okay, well, I think we'd have to ask Ms. Baker that question.
And that was part of the homework, was to get the answers, so it's not complete. Leave it at that.
All right, Your Honor, we'll follow through with the Baker issue.
But I think that if your approach is going to be to attack Ms. Pell, that is not going to inure to your benefit. You can continue, if you want to continue arguing this morning, we can, but I don't think that's going to be a good approach.
I'm not at all trying to argue with the court. I'm trying to address issues that I think the court has raised. There are some specific issues about Mr. Wagner's misappropriation of assets of the estate. I think we've looked into those. I think what I'm trying to tell the court is there is no evidence that Mr. Wagner tried to misappropriate assets of the estate.
I'm telling you, there is. It's this email. That is evidence. Now, Mr. Wagner's declaration is also evidence denying it. But you can't say there's no evidence. This email from Ms. Baker is evidence. It may not be dispositive, but you can't come in here and say there's no evidence.
Well, Your Honor, Ms. Baker has no affiliation with Sierra Mint or Mr. Wagner. She never was hired.
Right. She worked for the estate.
That's
what makes it even worse. She's on behalf of Mr. Calvert is referring customers to go get more product using your dyes. And here's the contact person at Sierra Mint. That's evidence.
Well, what we know, Your Honor, is that the mint had closed. Its operations were concluded. And there were customers calling trying to get matters serviced. And we spoke with you about those issues on the record with respect to really more custom minting issues that dealt with the Metalcraft dyes that were ultimately sold to Metalcraft. And we told you at the time that we were referring customers to Metalcraft to get those orders fulfilled. We wanted customers' concerns to be addressed. And I believe this is not a different set of issues. It's not custom minting. These are issues, I believe, about these other challenge coins or things like that. And Ms. Baker was referring them to Mr. Colwell, who she thought could service those customers' needs. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that we were trying to facilitate customers' concerns about having orders fulfilled where the mint could no longer fulfill those orders.
I get that, but it says your existing dies. The whole exercise was about, remember, the exercise was we were trying to determine ownership of dies. And so you sent out that big notice, and some people who believe they own dies contacted her, and she said, no, those dies are no longer with the mint. They're now with Sierra Mint. That's how I read that email. So I take that. We can go back and forth, but you're not going to shake me. I take that as evidence that she believed Sierra Mint was using estate property. Now, whether she was wrong or not is another question. I got four declarations saying that she's wrong. But why did she say it in the first place? No declaration from her. We're going to have to resolve this for another day. But believe you me, there will be an answer to this and many, many other questions I have. I raised them all raised a lot of them last October. I have more now. This is one of them. You don't have an answer today. That's okay. But I expressly raised this email in my letter, and the response from Mr. Calvert is, quote, I can't explain it.
Well, I think
and that's,
you can.
And that's the one thing I wanted to explain. And so I got four declarations with no explanation for the one thing I wanted, which is, why did she say that?
Well, Your Honor, I think in fairness, I think what we have addressed, the core issue is, did the trustee authorize or have knowledge of that these dyes were going to be used by some other party? And we're answering that directly. We're telling you, no, he never did. And Mr. Wagner is telling you he never took appropriated the dyes or has done anything with the dyes. So I think those issues, we are squarely addressing those before the court, and we are telling you this did not happen. Now, what Ms. Baker thought was happening, why Ms. Baker used the language she did in her email, I couldn't tell you that.
But someone needs to tell me. We'll go talk to Ms. Baker about it,
and we'll get a declaration from her.
We'll need that, but it's now the second time where Mr. Calvert has no explanation for why one of his last few employees, not like he had 100 employees at this time, he had a handful. He has no idea what they're saying is apparently what he's telling me. It doesn't look good. At best, he's just not competently managing folks. We can keep going round and round, but I'm kind of at the end now. You have not, in my view, satisfactorily explained that email. I specifically called it out in my letter. I got four declarations that I'll deny it, and that's evidence, but I've got this email, which is also evidence. Can't tell me there's no evidence to support Ms. Pell's claims. That's not true. Please stop attacking her. Let's move on then. I do have some other questions about the numbers of employees that are on the list to be paid. There are 100 employees. And according to the proof of service, those 100 employees were the ones who received notice of the settlement proposal. But according to the monthly operating reports, in December of 2017, 96 folks resigned or were terminated, and 18 were left. In January 2018, 4 employees were added, and then in February, 10 resigned or were terminated. Now, on the allocation of settlement, it says 92 employees were terminated, I guess, on 12/29. It doesn't expressly say that, but there are 92 employees that are on the initial list as being initially terminated, and then there are 8 employees, it says, terminated after 12/29. So maybe there's a simple explanation for why, maybe 4 resigned or they were terminated with cause. I don't know. Do you know? Or maybe Ms. Olson, do you know?
Ms. Olson may know better than I do, Your Honor. I do recall we did a fair amount of work on determining who the members of the class would be. And it was comprised of not just those who were laid off on the December 29 date, but others who were laid off within a certain period thereafter.
Right.
The statute, I think, provides.
I think it's 60 days. I would assume it would be 60 days.
I don't recall that. But I do recall that there were a pocket of employees who, the larger majority, were laid off on the 29th of December. And there were others who qualified within the class who were laid off at different dates.
Right. But what I'm saying is it appears to me that based upon the monthly operating reports, 106 people were terminated in that 60-day window between 12/29 and February 28th. But only 100 received notice and are getting payments. So unless there's an explanation for these other 6, the class is 6 people short.
And I think what I can tell you, Your Honor, is I think we did a great deal of work to determine who was in the class. And I will also say that we've given a bar date notice now in the case. And if there were other employees that were out there that thought they were entitled to claims, including Warnock claims, they would have put their hands up. So I think the class has been properly described, and the people that are reflected in the class list are those that were eligible to be members of the class.
All right, Ms. Olson, do you have any, can you shed any light on this, if you know?
Your Honor, I remember that we were relying on the employee information that we got from the trustee. We had also looked at the levels of employment that were in the court records. And I remember that being a specific bone of contention during the mediation. We resolved it, and I can't, as I'm sitting here now, remember precisely how many people had voluntarily resigned or if there had been some terminations for cause. Those people, however, would be excluded from the class based on the definition, based on the coverage of the Warn Act. But I can't tell Your Honor for certain. About 6 people. I can't remember that.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Olson. I'm trying to find the proof of service of the administrative claims bar date. But you served it on all former employees?
I don't remember that, Your Honor. I can't say that for certain.
Yeah, because that it's the question would be if there are six people, again, this is according to the monthly operating reports, 96 people resigned or were terminated in December, but only 92 people are on your list. And then 10 people were terminated or laid off or resigned. Again, they could be resigned. If they resigned, they wouldn't be eligible. That's why I'm hoping there was a Mr. Calvert would be on the phone.
I don't know. He may or may not remember, but
yeah,
There were, you know, I mean, Mr. Atala actually was somebody we settled with. I know he might have been among the employees.
There were other
numbers that reflected that. But, Your Honor, I think the thrust of that for today's purposes is we designated a class of people who we settled with.
Right.
And those are the only parties, the only employees who are settling their claims here today. So if there are other employees out there that had claims they wish to assert, they would still be free. They're not settling as part of this class, and they'd be free to assert them. But we're not aware.
That's not fair to them. I mean, the whole point of certifying a class because it was economically unfeasible for individuals to come and sue for administrative expense claim that we all know we're going to be pennies on the dollar. So that's why I certified a class.
Well, and I follow that, and I think we've done our very best to include in the class everyone that we think should be in the class.
Well, and this is the problem I have, and this comes back to my initial issue. Mr. Calvert sometimes has different views of what he can and can't do under the code, and he may unilaterally decide six people shouldn't be in the class, and he doesn't get to make that determination.
No, that didn't happen. That did not happen.
How do I know?
Because I'm telling you that didn't happen.
Okay. Well,
telling you the way we put the class together.
Then tell me why there are six people that are not on this list. And if you don't have an answer, I think I need to continue this. And you can't just tell me that. Trust me, Mr. Calvert did the right thing, because I don't. I don't trust Mr. Calvert. He's done a lot of things that are contrary to the code. We're going to talk about one of them in a moment. Paying Ms. Johnson a stipend because he thinks it's the right thing to do. That's the type of stuff he has done throughout this case. And I am not confident that he just didn't remove five people.
Well, Your Honor, I would have to go back. If you want a specific answer as to why, what the number, comparing the numbers, so what was in the operating report, who the employees were that were not included in the class, I would have to go research that. And I would have to determine for you how we determined that they should not be concluded in the class.
Right.
But I will tell you, I was in the room when we made that determination, and there was no effort to take people that we thought should qualify and take them out arbitrarily. We put everyone in the class that we thought was eligible to participate. And the reason we wanted that done is we wanted to include everybody that could settle their Warren Act claim. We want these claims to be resolved. We are trying to push this case to a resolution.
That was Mr. Calvert. Did you just join?
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Calvert. We are. Thank you for joining us. We actually have a question for you that hopefully you can answer. I have looked at the monthly operating reports, and it showed that at the end of December 2017, 96 people resigned or were terminated. And in February, 10 people were resigned or terminated. That is a total of 106 people that would have been resigned or terminated within the 60-day window that would be on its face apparently eligible for Warren Act claims. But the list before me has only 100 names on it. Do you know why the other six people are not on this list?
Well, I think everybody's on the list. I think what we did is we hired back a few to complete some orders and so on. But we gave everybody notice. We terminated everybody and brought a few back, including people that had been terminated, you know, a month or two earlier. To help clean up and help close down the operations.
Okay, because yes, and because the MORs do show that in January, 4 employees were added. So maybe that might explain why 96 were terminated, but you're only seeking to pay 92 if you brought 4 of those 96 back. Is that what you
think? Yes, we brought back a few people, but I'd have to look at the schedule, Your Honor, to tell you. I know it's Jeff Goodfellow is one, and there's a few others.
All right. And then in February, there were 10 who were resigned or were terminated, but only 8 are scheduled to receive settlement payments. Do you know why that would be?
Well, everybody had notice from that time frame to the end of February when we let them go. I mean, everybody knew. We advised everybody when we were closing down in December that we would have a skeleton crew probably to the end of February. And everybody was advised of that at the time and so on. So there's a few that are not, I can't say that they're not on that schedule. I think they are on that schedule if they were employed as of December 31st and then brought back.
Well,
I can't answer your question, Your Honor.
Okay. I think I need to continue this so we can get a resolution of just a declaration explaining the numbers, and if you can confirm why these, it's by my count 6 people who were are not accounted for based upon the monthly operating reports. There may be, and I'm hoping just an explanation like the one you gave, which is 4 of the people you terminated in December came back, and so they wouldn't be eligible to be in the class. And as the other 2, I don't know, maybe one was Bill Atala, who we did a separate deal with, and maybe there was somebody else. So there may be, hopefully there's an explanation.
Well, there's one person that was a part-time person that didn't qualify either, but we'll have to go through it.
Okay.
I can't sit here and tell you at this
point. Let me turn to Brenda Johnson. In the declaration, coming back to you, Mr. Guerin, the trustee declares that he closed the Virginia office on July 31, 2017. I went back and looked. I entered an order authorizing the trustee to reject that lease effective November 30, 2016. Why the 8-month delay in closing the Virginia facility? And Mr. Calvert, Mr. Guerin, I'm not sure knows. Can you tell me?
I can tell you we did terminate that lease and we did close down. We did have another lease that we utilized, which was a much cheaper lease for a period of time, and then decided that even from a more cost-saving basis, we needed to shrink even further.
So
that's when we had her go to her home and work out of her home as a sales office.
Wait a minute. So you had 2 leases in Virginia?
No, we had a lease. We terminated it. We gave them the notice. We stayed on a month-to-month basis for a period of time, but we terminated that lease. We were out of it, and we stayed in it for a period of time with their approval, with no issue, and then ended up closing it down.
Okay, so when I entered the order authorizing you to reject the Springfield lease effective November 30, you were still in the space for another 8 months?
We were on a month-to-month basis is what we worked out with them for a period of time.
Okay.
We didn't want the long-term lease.
Got it. Okay. Why $550 a month to Ms. Johnson?
Well, there were certain costs. She paid some money to help clean out the office and close it down. And then the monthly costs were associated with certain shipping, certain other charges that were going on from her for her to continue her sales effort. And I think they're detailed there. They're not as to the types of items.
Well, I see the email exchange that you provided, which basically it was an agreed upon number. She asked for something higher. Someone, a Matt Lee, who I don't know, offered $325. $550 was just a compromise number. It's not tied to any expenses, is it?
Well, when the initial discussion of expenses occurred, the nature of her expenses, there was discussion of how much there was and what she was asking for. There was a requested amount that outlined some of those items, and then it was negotiated down to a lower number, but there was some detail to start with.
Mr. Garrett, in your office, demanded return of the computer and an affidavit from Ms. Johnson confirming that Mint documents and designs were destroyed. Did that happen?
We looked into it, Your Honor, and I don't have an answer yet. We are still trying to get to the bottom of whether the computer actually has been returned.
Okay.
Mr. New, I can tell you, never received a response back from Ms. Johnson, but there may have been employees of the Mint that did, and I'm not sure about what happened to the computer yet.
Okay. Mr. Calvert, you declare that you have no reason to believe that Ms. Johnson ever set up a company or used Mint designs or customer lists. So how do you explain her email that suggests otherwise?
Well, I think our email to her was to not to do that, and then afterwards she didn't at that point. In other words, we communicated very clearly to her that she can't do that, should not do that, and it was a theft of the estate's assets, and she discontinued what she was doing. So we think she was just getting started, and therefore we got her stopped. So that's what we're trying to state.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to belabor this any longer. Mr. Calvert, you weren't on the phone, but let me just suffice it to say, and you'll listen, I did not have complimentary things to say about you. And Mr. Garrett can give you the blow-by-blow offline. But I'm not going to run to ground the issues that I raised in my letter, but suffice it to say that your and your counsel's position that Ms. Pell is just some sort of kook who is making false accusations does not sit well with me. So let me turn to the specifics here today. I strongly disagree with Mr. Calvert's conclusion that the additional stipends paid to Ms. Johnson were ordinary course payments. The bankruptcy code precludes the trustee from paying this expense without first providing notice to creditors and affording them an opportunity to object. Section 503B provides that administrative expenses shall be allowed, but only after notice and a hearing. See In re Klubeck, 788 F3rd 1243 at 1245, 9th Circuit, 2015, which held that a Chapter 7 trustee could not pay taxes incurred by the bankruptcy estate, which were in the nature of an administrative expense, without first providing notice to creditors and granting them an opportunity to object, even though the trustee had a statutory obligation to pay federal taxes. The trustee in this case is well aware of this limitation on his powers, as he properly sought court approval of bonus payments to Mr. Chacon in this case, but for some unknown reason kept the payments to Ms. Johnson a secret. In Klubeck, the Ninth Circuit ruled it was error for the bankruptcy court to enter a final report approving the tax payment without first determining the propriety of the payment after notice and an opportunity for a hearing. That all being said, I'm not going to hold up the payment to Ms. Johnson to determine if it should be set off against some amounts that she should not have been paid, because that will result in holding up the settlement payments to other employees who have done nothing wrong. Instead, the court will address the trustee's unauthorized payments in connection with his application for compensation. Similarly, the court will further examine questions relating to the alleged unauthorized use of estate property, as well as the substantial payments made to Mr. Wagner during this case, over $10,000 in the month of August alone, and to others without court authority, again, in connection with the trustee's application to be paid. And as I told Mr. Guerin, Mr. Calvert, you will not be paid until I get an explanation for the emails that Ms. Baker sent, your employee, telling folks to contact Sierra Mint to get product used to being produced by their dyes. Now, however, while I'm not going to continue this matter to address those issues, I am going to continue this matter to address the six employees that were terminated between December 29 and February 28. I'll continue this. The next calendar we have is December 7, and I know you're all going to be here on that time anyway for fee applications, which I imagine are being filed today. Ms. Olson, anything further? And I'll come to you, Mr. Guerin.
Nothing further from me, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Guerin.
I heard you say, Your Honor, that we could submit a declaration addressing these issues about the six employees. And my question is, if we do that, can we submit an order at that time? Or would you want us to come to the hearing and address it?
No, that's a good point. If you submit the declaration and it's satisfactory to me, submit a received unsigned order with the declaration, and if it's fine, I'll sign the order and we'll strike the hearing.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Guerin. Thank you, Mr. Calvert, and thank you, Ms. Olson.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Guerin. Mr. Guerin, on one more matter, I neglected to mention, if you could come up, and I'm sorry Mr. Calvert's off the phone. It strikes me is that this case should now be in a 7, right? And the reason I didn't grant your motion to convert it to a 7 back earlier this year was there were still employees, there were still some operations, the state was actually making money because it was selling assets. But, now, as of September, you're completely cleared out. You're all done. No employees. Seems to me that there's no point in staying in an 11 into the next quarter to incur quarterly fees to the U.S. Trustee's office. So, my inclination is to issue a show cause order. Not because I'm upset, but just it makes sense to put this in a 7 now. But I just wanted to get your, reaction to that, if you have any.
I want to consult with the trustee about it, Your Honor, but my reaction to it is we are really pretty far down the road in the administration, the final administration of this case. And it seemed to me that in some ways converting the case might create an additional layer of reporting and issues we'd have to deal with, rather than, I think you had suggested we would do a structured dismissal in this case. I think that's what you told us when we brought the conversion motion before you.
Right.
I can tell you that where we are is we have liquidated really substantially all the assets. There's a few pockets of assets left,
right,
including what I'll tell you is the inventory, the China inventory.
Right.
That's the one. It's about $350,000 that's on the monthly reports. You see that reflected in the monthly reports on book value, about $350,000. And we were planning on coming forward with a protocol to address the liquidation of that pocket of assets. And you recall the issues about the sheriff seized inventory that has disputed claims to ownership on that. We have to address those. And then we have a couple of recovery or avoidance action type claims that we need to address. So there's very little in the way of assets to deal with. We are filing a motion today to address the few administrative claims that were filed, once the bar date was established. So there are only a handful of those, and we're going to file a motion. You'll be before you on December 7th that will seek to address the resolution of those and a proposed distribution on those administrative claims. So, okay. if we do that, that I think would effectively resolve really most of all of the administrative issues, and we will have a tail of addressing these additional recoveries of and liquidation of assets, which I think could be done in maybe the first half of 2019. And our intention at this point had been structured dismissal through that point. So I'd want to talk to the trustee about the cost benefit of the savings on the U.S. trustee fees that might be engendered.
Versus,
and I don't think there'd be a whole lot in the way of distributions in those first couple of quarters. There would be a final distribution that would occur.
Well, you're going to distribute $2.5 million.
Hopefully. Yeah. I mean, I think we're hoping.
It's going to be distributed. I mean, $2.5 million is going to be distributed. That's about what the trustee is sitting on, right?
Correct. About 2.4, a little less than 2.4.
So there's going to be quarterly fee based upon that. Well, what I'll do then, if you're filing additional motions today, let me see what's filed. I still may issue my show cause. That doesn't mean I'll grant it. It will, you know, give me the chance to consider arguments. But I'll see what motions you file. But if I do, I will set it for December 7 as well. So I'm not going to make you come in another time. The 14th is our last calendar, so the 7th will be busy, but I just soon put it on that calendar. But I'll look for your motions then.
If I could, I would ask if you would set it for the 14th, given we have these other motions that would take us some time to address. And what I would hope at that time would be we could talk to you on the 7th as to whether that motion should go forward or not. We could address where we stand with the
okay.
state at that point.
I'm happy to do that. I'm here. I just want to set it for you. I know you're going to be here on the 7th, right. But if you know you're available on the 14th as well, if I do issue that order, I'll set it for the 14th.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Garrett. Have a nice weekend. Thank you. All right, then. Let's turn to the Seabrook Dental matter.